From science fairs, famous Nobelists he's impressed, the whole shebang. And every semester, Francesca has to make up some bunk, unpassable test to keep him out. She snorted. Like, hey, Beaker, solve this Rubik's Cube in under 30 seconds. Shelby clicked her tongue against her teeth. Except the Nimrod passed that one. But if it's a cover-up, Luce asked, feeling sort of bad for Beaker. What's it a cover-up for? People like me. I'm an Nephilim. N-E-P-H-I-L-I-M. That means anything with angel in its DNA. Mortals, immortals, transeternals. We try not to discriminate. Shouldn't the singular be, you know, Nephil, like cherub from cherubim and seraph from seraphim? Shelby scowled. Seriously? Would you want to be called a Nephil? It sounds like a bag you carry your shame in. No, thanks. Nephilim it is, no matter how many of us you're talking about. So Shelby was a sort of angel. Strange. She didn't look or act the part. She wasn't gorgeous like Daniel, Cam, or Francesca. Didn't possess the magnetism of someone like Roland or Arian. She just seemed kind of coarse and cranky. So it's like angel prep school, Luce said. But for what? Do you go on to angel college after this? It depends on what the world needs. A lot of kids take a year off and do a Nephilim core. You get to travel, have a fling with a foreigner, etc. But that's in times of, you know, relative peace. Right now, well... Right now, what? Whatever. Shelby looked like she was biting the word. It just depends on who you are. Everyone here has, you know, varying degrees of power, she went on, seeming to read Luce's mind. A sliding scale depending on your family tree. But in your case, this Luce knew. I'm just here because of Daniel. Shelby tossed her napkin on her empty plate and stood up. That's a real impressive way to pitch yourself, Luce. The girl whose big shot... That's a real impressive way to pitch yourself, Luce. The girl whose big shot boyfriend pulled some strings. Was that what everyone thought about her here? Was that the truth? Shelby reached over and stole the last bite of quiche off Luce's plate. If you want a Lucinda Price fan club, I'm sure you can find that here. Just leave me out of it, okay? What are you talking about? Luce stood up. Maybe she and Shelby needed to rewind again. I don't want a fan club. See, I told you, she heard a high but pretty voice say. Suddenly, the girl with the green scarf was standing before her, grinning and nudging another girl forward. Luce glanced past them, but Shelby was already far away, and probably not worth catching up to. Up close, the green scarf girl looked kind of like a young Selma Hayek, with full lips and an even fuller chest. The other girl, with her pale coloring, hazel eyes, and short black hair, looked kind of like Luce. "Wait, so you're really Lucinda Price?" the pale girl asked. She had very small white teeth, and was using them to hold a couple of sequin-tipped bobby pins while she twisted a few dark tendrils into little knots.
As in Luce and Daniel? As in the girl who just came from that awful school in Alabama?
Georgia. Luce sort of nodded.
Same thing. Oh my God, what was Cam like? I saw him once at this death metal concert. Of course, I was too nervous to introduce myself. Not that you'd be interested in Cam, because obviously, Daniel!
She trilled a laugh.
I'm Dawn, BT Dubs. This is Jasmine.
Hi, Lou said slowly. This was new. Don't mind her. She just drank, like, 11 coffees. Jasmine spoke about 3 times more slowly than Dawn did. What she means is we're excited to meet you. We always say how you and Daniel are, like, the greatest love story ever. Seriously? Luce cracked her knuckles.
Are you kidding? Dawn asked, though Luce kept expecting them to be the ones working up to some kind of joke. All that dying again and again? Okay, does it make you want him even more? I bet it does. And oh, when that fire that burns you up...
She closed her eyes, put a hand over her stomach, then brushed it up her body, clasping a fist over her heart.
My mom used to tell me the story when I was a little girl.
Luce was shocked. She glanced around the busy terrace, wondering whether anyone could overhear them. Speaking of burning up, her cheeks must be beet red right now. An iron bell rang from the roof of the mess hall to signal the end of breakfast, and Luce was glad to see that everyone else had other things to focus on.
like getting to class. Your mom used to tell you what story? Luce asked slowly. About me and Daniel?
Just some of the highlights, Dawn said, opening her eyes. Does it feel like a hot flash? Like a menopause kind of thing? Not that you would know.
Jasmine smacked Dawn on the arm.
Did you just compare Luce's unbridled passion to a hot flash?
Sorry, Dawn giggled. I'm just fascinated. It sounds so totally romantic and awesome. I'm envious, in a good way.
Envious that I die every time I try to get with the guy of my dreams? Luce hunched up her shoulders. It's actually kind of a buzzkill. Tell that to the girl whose only kiss to date was with Ira Frank of the irritable bowel syndrome. Jasmine gestured teasingly at Dawn. When Luce didn't laugh, Dawn and Jasmine filled in with a placating giggle, as if they thought she was just being modest. Luce had never been on the receiving end of one of those giggles before.
What exactly did your mom say? Luce asked.
Oh, just the usual stuff. The war broke out, shit hit the fan, and when they drew a line in the clouds, Daniel was all, "Nothing can tear us apart," and that pissed everyone off. Of course, it's my favorite part of the story. So now your love has to suffer this eternal punishment where you still desperately want each other, but you can't, like, you know.
But in some lives they can, Jasmine corrected Dawn, then winked impishly at Luce, who almost couldn't move from the shock of hearing all of this.
No way, Dawn flung out a hand dismissively. The whole point is that she bursts into flames when she...
Seeing Luce's horrified expression, Dawn winced.
Sorry, not what you want to hear.
Jasmine cleared her throat and leaned in.
My older sister was telling me this one story from your past that I swear would... Ooh!
Dawn linked her arm through Luce's, as if this knowledge that Luce had no access to, made her a more desirable friend. This was maddening. Luce was fiercely embarrassed. And okay, a little excited, and absolutely unsure whether any of it was true. One thing was sure, Luce was suddenly kind of famous. But it felt strange, like she was one of those unnamed bimbos next to the It Boy movie star in a paparazzi photo.
You guys, Jasmine was pointing exaggeratedly down at the clock on her phone. We're so super late. We've got to book it to class.
Luce grimaced, quickly grabbing her backpack. She had no idea what class she had first, or where to find it, or how to take Jasmine and Dawn's enthusiasm. She hadn't seen such extended, eager smiles since, well, maybe ever. Do either of you know how I figure out where my first class is? I don't think I got a schedule.
Duh, Dawn said. Follow us. We're all together. All the time. It's so fun.
The two girls walked with Luce, one on either side, and took her on a winding tour between the tables of other kids finishing their breakfasts. Despite being so super late, both Jasmine and Dawn practically sauntered across the freshly cut grass. Luce thought about asking these girls what was up with Shelby, but she didn't want to start off looking like a gossip. Besides, the girls seemed nice and everything, but it wasn't like Luce needed to make any new best friends. She had to keep reminding herself this was only temporary. Temporary, but still stunningly beautiful. The three of them walked along the hydrangea path, which curved around the mess hall. Dawn was chattering about something, but Luce couldn't take her eyes off the bluff's dramatic edge, how abruptly the terrain dropped hundreds of feet to the glittering ocean. The waves rolled toward the small stretch of tawny beach at the foot of the cliff, almost as casually as the shoreline student body rolled toward class.
Here we are, Jasmine said.
An impressive two-story A-frame cabin stood alone at the end of the path. It had been built in the middle of a shady pocket of redwoods, so its steep triangular roof and the vast open lawn in front of it were covered with a blanket of fallen needles. There was a nice grassy patch with some picnic tables, but the main attraction was the cabin itself. More than half of it looked like it was made of glass, all wide tinted windows and open sliding doors, like something Frank Lloyd Wright could have designed. Several students lounged on a huge second-story deck that faced the ocean, and several more kids were mounting the twin staircases that wound up from the path.
Welcome to the Nephi Lodge, Jasmine said.
This is where you guys have class?
Luce's mouth was agape. It looked more like a vacation home than a school building. Next to her, Dawn squealed and squeezed Luce's wrist.
Good morning, Stephen,
Dawn called across the lawn, waving to an older man who was standing at the foot of the stairs. He had a thin face, stylish rectangular glasses, and a thick head of wavy salt-and-pepper hair.
"I just absolutely love it when he wears the three-piece suit," she whispered.
"Morning, girls." The man smiled at them and waved. He looked at Luce long enough to make her veer toward nervousness, but the smile stayed on his face. "See you in a few," he called, and started up the stairs.
"Stephen Fillmore," Jasmine whispered, filling Luce in as they trailed behind him up the stairs. "A.K.A. SF, A.K.A. the Silver Fox. He's one of our teachers, and yes, Don is truly, madly, deeply in love with him, even though he's spoken for. She is shameless."
"But I love Francesca, too."
Don swatted Jasmine, then turned to Luce, her dark eyes smiling.
"I defy you not to develop a couple's crush on them."
"Wait." Luce paused. "The Silver Fox and Francesca are our teachers? And you call them by their first names? And they're together? Who teaches what?"
"We call the whole morning block humanities," Jasmine said, "though angelics would be more appropriate. Frankie and Stephen teach it jointly. Part of the deal here, sort of yin and yang. You know, so none of the students get swayed."
Luce bit her lip. They'd reached the top of the stairs and were standing in a crowd of students on the deck. Everyone else was starting to amble through the sliding glass doors.
"What do you mean, swayed?"
"They're both fallen, of course, but have picked different sides. She's an angel, and he's more of a demon."
Don spoke nonchalantly, as if she were talking about the difference between frozen yogurt flavors. Seeing Luce's eyes bulge, she added,
"It's not like they can get married or anything, though that would be the hottest wedding ever. They just sort of live in sin."
"A demon is teaching our humanities class?" Luce asked. "And that's okay?" Don and Jasmine looked at each other and chuckled.
"Very okay," Don said. "You'll come around to Stephen. Come on, we gotta go."
Following the flow of other kids, Luce entered the classroom. It was broad and had three shallow risers with desks on them that led down to a couple of long tables. Most of the light came in through skylights. The natural lighting and high ceilings made the room seem even bigger than it was. An ocean breeze blew in through the open doors and kept the air comfortable and fresh. It could not have been more different from Sword and Cross. Luce thought she could almost have liked Shoreline if it hadn't been for the fact that her whole reason for being here, the most important person in her life, was missing. She wondered if Daniel was thinking about her. Did he miss her the way she missed him? Luce chose a desk close to the windows, between Jasmine and a cute boy-next-door kind of guy, who was wearing cutoffs, a Dodgers cap, and a navy sweatshirt. A few girls stood clustered near the door to the bathroom. One of them had curly hair and boxy purple glasses. When Luce saw the girl's profile, she nearly bolted from her seat.
"Pen."
But when the girl turned toward Luce, her face was a little squarer, and her clothes were a little tighter, and her laugh was a little louder, and Luce almost felt like her heart was wilting. Of course it wasn't Pen. It never would be. Ever again. Luce could feel the other kids glancing at her. Some of them outright stared. The only one who didn't was Shelby, who gave Luce an acknowledging nod. It wasn't a huge class, just 20 desks arranged on the risers, facing the two long mahogany tables at the front. There were two dry erase whiteboards behind the tables, two bookshelves on either side, two trash cans, two desk lamps, two laptops, one on each table, and the two teachers, Stephen and Francesca, huddled near the front of the room, whispering. In a move Luce wasn't expecting, they turned and stared at her, too, then glided to the tables. Francesca sat on top of one, with one leg tucked beneath her and one of her high heels skimming the wood floor. Stephen leaned against the other table, opened a heavy maroon leather portfolio, and rested his pen between his lips. For an older man, he was good-looking, sure, but Luce almost wished he weren't. He reminded her of Cam and of how deceptive a demon's charm could be. She waited for the rest of the class to take out textbooks she didn't have, to plunge into some reading assignment she'd be behind on, so she could surrender to feeling overwhelmed and just daydream about Daniel. But none of that happened, and most of the kids were still sneaking glances at her. "By now, you must all have noticed that we're welcoming a new student." Francesca's voice was low and honey-thick, like a jazz singer's. Stephen smiled, showing a flash of brilliant white teeth.
Tell us, Luce, how are you liking Shoreline so far?
The color drained from Luce's face as the other students' desks made scraping sounds on the floor. They were actually turning in their seats to focus on her. She could feel her heart race and her palms grow damp. She shrank in her seat, wishing she were just a normal kid at a normal school back home in normal Thunderbolt, Georgia. At times over the past few days, she'd wished she'd never seen a shadow, never gotten into the kind of trouble that left her dear friend's dad, or got her involved with Cam, or made it impossible for Daniel to be near her. But there was where her anxious, tumbling mind always came to a full stop. How to be normal and still have Daniel, who was so very far from normal? It was impossible. So here she was, sucking it up.
I guess I'm still getting used to Shoreline.
Her voice wobbled, betraying her, echoing off the sloped ceiling. But it seems all right so far. Stephen laughed.
Well, Francesca and I thought to help you get used to it, we changed gears from our usual Tuesday morning student presentations.
From across the room, Shelby hooted.
Yes.
And Luce noticed that she had a stack of note cards on her desk and a big poster at her feet that read, Apparitions Ain't So Bad. So Luce had just gotten her out of a presentation. That had to be worth something in roommate points.
What Stephen means, Francesca chimed in, is that we're going to play a game as an icebreaker.
She slid down from her table and walked around the room, heels clicking as she distributed a sheet of paper to each student. Luce expected the chorus of groans at those words usually evoked from a classroom of teens. But these kids all seemed so agreeable and well-adjusted. They were actually just going to go with the flow.
When she laid the sheet on Luce's desk, Francesca said, This should give you an idea of who some of your classmates are and what goals we work toward in this class.
Luce looked down at the paper. Lines had been drawn on the page, dividing it into 20 boxes. Each box contained a phrase. It was a game she'd played before, once at summer camp in western Georgia as a little kid, and again a couple of times in her classes at Dover. The object was to go around the room and match a different student with each phrase. Mostly, she was relieved. There were definitely more embarrassing icebreakers out there. But when she looked more closely at the phrases, expecting normal things like, has a pet turtle, or wants to go skydiving someday, she was a little unnerved to see things like, speaks more than 18 languages, and has visited the outer world. It was about to be painfully obvious that Luce was the only non-Nephilim in the class. She thought back to the nervous waiter who had brought her and Shelby their breakfast. Maybe Luce would be more comfortable among the scholarship kids. Beaker Brady didn't even know he'd dodged a bullet.
If no one has questions, Stephen said from the front of the room, you're welcome to begin.
Go outside, enjoy yourselves, Francesca added. Take all the time you need.
Luce followed the rest of the students onto the deck. As they walked toward the railing, Jasmine leaned over Luce's shoulder, pointing a green lacquered fingernail at one of the boxes.
I have a relative who's a full-blooded cherub, she said. Crazy old Uncle Carlos.
Luce nodded, like she knew what that meant, and jotted in Jasmine's name.
Ooh, and I can levitate, Dawn chirped, pointing to the top left corner of Luce's page. Not like 100% of the time, but usually after I've had my coffee.
Wow. Luce tried not to stare. It didn't seem like Dawn was making a joke. She could levitate? Trying not to show that she was feeling more and more inadequate, Luce searched the page for something, anything she knew anything about. Has experience summoning the announcers. The shadows. Daniel had told her the proper name for them that last night at Sword and Cross. Though she'd never actually summoned them, they'd always just shown up. Luce did have some experience.
You can write me in there.
She pointed to the bottom left corner of the paper. Both Jasmine and Dawn looked up at her, a little awed but not disbelieving, before moving on to fill in the rest of their sheets. Luce's heart slowed down a little. Maybe this wasn't going to be so bad. In the next few minutes she met Lilith, a prim redhead who was one of three Nephilim triplets.
You can tell us apart by our vestigial tails, she explained. Mine's curly.
Oliver, a deep-voiced squat boy who'd visited the outer world on summer vacation last year.
So totally overrated, I can't even begin to tell you.
And Jack, who felt like he was on the cusp of being able to read minds and thought it would be all right if Luce wrote him down for that.
I sense you're okay with that, am I right?
He made a gun out of his fingers and clicked his tongue. She had three boxes left when Shelby tugged the paper out of her hands.
I can do both of these, she said, pointing at two of the boxes. Which one do you want me for?
Speaks more than 18 languages or has glimpsed a past life.
Wait a minute, Luce whispered. You can glimpse past lives?
Shelby waggled her eyebrows at Luce and dashed her signature into the box, adding her name in the 18 languages box for good measure. Luce stared at the paper, thinking about all her own past lives and how frustratingly off-limits they were to her. She'd underestimated Shelby. But her roommate was already gone. Standing in Shelby's place was the boy she'd sat next to inside the classroom. He was a good half-foot taller than Luce, with a bright, friendly smile, a splash of freckles on his nose, and clear blue eyes. Something about him, even the way he was chewing on his pen, looked sturdy. Luce realized this was a strange word to describe someone she'd never spoken to, but she couldn't help it.
Oh, thank God,
he laughed, smacking his forehead.
The one thing I can do is the one thing you have left.
Can reflect a mirror image of self or others, Luce read slowly. He tossed his head from side to side and wrote his name in the box. Miles Fisher.
Real impressive to someone like you, I'm sure.
Yeah. Luce turned away. Someone like her, who didn't even know what that meant.
Wait, hey, where are you going?
He tugged her sleeve.
Uh-oh, you didn't catch the self-effacing joke?
When she shook her head, Miles's face fell.
I just meant, compared to everyone else in the class, I'm barely hanging on. The only person I've ever been able to reflect other than myself was my mom. Freaked my dad out for about 10 seconds, but then it faded.
Wait. Luce blinked at Miles. You made a mirror image of your mother?
By accident. They say it's easy to do with the people you, like, love.
He blushed, the faintest rosy pink across his cheekbones.
Now you're going to think I'm some kind of mama's boy. I just mean easy is about where my powers end. Whereas you're the famous Lucinda Price.
He waved his hands in a very masculine version of spirit fingers.
I wish everyone would stop saying that, she snapped.
Then, feeling rude, she sighed and leaned against the deck's railing to look out at the water. It was just so hard to process all these hints that other people here knew more about her than she knew about herself. She didn't mean to take it out on this guy.
I'm sorry, it's just, I thought I was the only one barely hanging on. What's your story? Oh, I'm what they call diluted, he said, making exaggerated air quotes. Mom has angel in her blood a few generations back, but all my other relatives are mortal. My powers are embarrassingly low grade, but I'm here because my parents endowed the school with, this deck you're standing on.
Wow.
It's really not impressive. My family's obsessed with me being at Shoreline. You should hear the pressure I get at home to date a nice Nephilim girl for once.
Luce laughed, one of the first real laughs she'd had in days. Miles rolled his eyes good-naturedly.
So, I saw you having breakfast with Shelby this morning. She your roommate?
Luce nodded.
Speaking of nice Nephilim girls, she joked. Well, I know she's kind of,
Miles hissed and made a clawing motion with one hand, causing Luce to crack up again.
Anyway, I'm not the star student here or anything, but I've been around a while, and half the time I still think this place is pretty crazy. So if you ever want to have a very normal breakfast or something...
Luce found herself bobbing her head. Normal. Music to her mortal ears.
Like tomorrow? Miles asked.
That sounds great. Miles grinned and waved goodbye, and Luce realized that all the other students had already gone back inside. Alone, for the first time all morning, she looked down at the sheet of paper in her hand, unsure how to feel about the other kids at Shoreline. She missed Daniel, who could have decoded a lot of this for her, if only he hadn't been... Where was he, anyway? She didn't even know. Too far away. She pressed a finger to her lips, remembering his last kiss. The incredible embrace of his wings... She felt so cold without him, even in the California sunshine. But she was here because of him, accepted into this class of angels, or whatever they were, complete with her bizarre new reputation, all thanks to him. In a weird way, it felt good to be connected to Daniel so inextricably. Until he came for her, it was all she had to hold on to. 3. 16 days.
Okay, hit me. What's the weirdest thing about Shoreline so far?
It was Wednesday morning before class, and Luce was seated at a sunny breakfast table on the terrace, sharing a pot of tea with Miles. He was wearing a vintage yellow T-shirt with a Sunkiss logo on it, a baseball cap pulled down just above his blue eyes, flip-flops, and frayed jeans. Feeling inspired by the very relaxed dress code at Shoreline, Luce had swapped out her standard black getup. She was wearing a red sundress with a short white cardigan, which felt kind of like the first day of sunshine after a long stretch of rain. She dropped a spoonful of sugar into her cup and laughed.
I don't even know where to start. Maybe my roommate, who I think snuck in just before sunrise this morning, and was gone again before I woke up. No, wait, it's taking a class taught by a demon and angel couple. Or, she swallowed, the way kids here look at me like I'm some legendary freak. Anonymous freak, I got used to, but notorious freak.
You are not notorious.
Miles took a giant bite of his croissant.
I'm gonna tackle those one at a time, he said, chewing.
As he dabbed the side of his mouth with his napkin, Luce half marveled, half chuckled at his occasionally impeccable table manners. She couldn't help picturing him taking some fancy etiquette course at the golf club as a boy.
Shelby's rough around the edges, Miles said, but she can be cool, too, when she feels like it. Not like I've ever witnessed that side of her.
He laughed.
But that's the rumor. And the Frankie Steven thing weirded me out at first, too. But somehow they make it work. It's like a celestial balancing act. For some reason, having both sides present gives students here the most freedom to develop.
There was that word again, develop. She remembered that Daniel had used it when he first told her he wouldn't be joining her at Shoreline. But develop into what? It could only apply to the kids who were Nephilim, not Luce, who was the lone full human in her class of almost angels, waiting until her angel felt like swooping back in to save her.
Luce, Miles said, interrupting her thoughts. The reason people stare at you is because everyone's heard about you and Daniel, but no one knows the real story.
So instead of just asking me...
What? Whether you two really do it on the clouds? Or whether his rampant, glory ever overwhelms your mortal...
He stopped, catching the horrified look on Luce's face, then gulped.
Sorry. I mean, you're right. They let it blow up into some big myth. Everyone else, that is. I try not to, speculate.
Miles put down his tea and stared at his napkin.
Maybe it feels too personal to ask about.
Miles shifted his gaze and was now staring at her, but it didn't make Luce feel nervous. Instead, his clear blue eyes and slightly lopsided smile felt like an open door, an invitation to talk about some of the things she hadn't been able to tell anyone yet. As much as it sucked, Luce understood why Daniel and Mr. Cole had forbidden her to reach out to Callie or her parents. But Daniel and Mr. Cole were the ones who had enrolled her at Shoreline. They were the ones who had said she'd be okay here. So she couldn't see any reason to keep her story a secret from someone like Miles, especially since he already knew some version of the truth. It's a long story, she said. Literally. And I still don't know all of it. But basically, Daniel is an important angel. I guess he was kind of a big deal before the fall. She swallowed, not wanting to meet Miles's eyes. She felt nervous. At least, he was until he fell in love with me. It all began to pour out of her. Everything, from her first day at Sword and Cross, to how Arian and Gabby took care of her, to how Molly and Cam taunted her, to the gut-wrenching feeling of seeing a photograph of herself in a former life. Penn's death, and how it devastated her. The surreal battle in the cemetery. Luce left out some of the Daniel details, private moments they'd shared together. But by the time she finished, she thought she'd given Miles a pretty complete picture of what had happened, and hopefully dispelled the myth of her intrigue for at least one person. At the end, she felt lighter.
Wow, I've never actually told this stuff to anyone. Feels really good to say it aloud, like it's more real now that I've admitted it to someone else.
You can keep going if you want to, he said.
I know I'm only here for a short time, she said. And in a way, I think Shoreline will help me to get used to people. I mean, angels like Daniel. And Nephilim, like you. But I still can't help feeling out of place,
like I'm posing as something I'm not.
Miles had been nodding and agreeing with Luce the whole time she told her story, but now he shook his head.
No way. The fact that you're mortal makes the whole thing even more impressive.
Luce glanced around the terrace. For the first time, she noticed a clear line dividing the tables of the Nephilim kids from the rest of the student body. The Nephilim claimed all the tables on the west side, closest to the water. There were fewer of them, no more than 20, but they took up a lot more tables, sometimes with just one kid at a table that could have seated 6, while the rest of the kids had to cram into the remaining east side tables. Take Shelby, for example, who sat alone, battling the fierce wind over the paper she was trying to read. There was a lot of musical chairs, but not one of the non-Nephilim seemed to consider crossing over to sit with the gifted kids. Luce had met some of the other non-gifted kids yesterday. After lunch, classes were held in the main building, a much less architecturally impressive structure, where more traditional subjects were taught. Biology, geometry, European history. Some of those students seemed nice, but Luce felt an unspoken distance, all because she was on the gifted track that thwarted the possibility of a conversation.
"Don't get me wrong, I've gotten to be friends with some of those guys."
Miles pointed to a crowded table.
"I'd pick Connor or Eddie G for a game of touch football any day over any of the Nephilim. But seriously, do you think anyone over there could have handled what you did and lived to tell about it?"
Luce rubbed her neck and felt tears prick at the corners of her eyes. Miss Sophia's dagger was still fresh in her mind, and she could never think about that night without her heart aching over Penn. Her death had been so senseless, none of it was fair.
"I barely lived," she said softly.
"Yeah," Miles said, wincing. "That part I heard about. It's weird. Francesca and Stephen are big on teaching us about the present and the future, but not really the past. Something to do with empowering us."
"What do you mean?"
"Ask me anything about the great battle that's coming and the role a strapping young Nephilim like myself might play in it. But the early stuff you were talking about? None of the lessons here ever really go into that. Speaking of which..."
Miles pointed at the terrace, which was emptying out.
"We should go. You want to do this again sometime?"
"Definitely." And Luce meant it. She liked Miles. He was much easier to talk to than anyone else she'd met so far. He was friendly and had the kind of sense of humor that put Luce instantly at ease. But she was distracted by something he'd said. The battle that was coming. Daniel and Cam's battle. Or a battle with Miss Sophia's group of elders. If even the Nephilim were preparing for it, where did that leave Luce? Stephen and Francesca had a way of dressing in complementary colors that made them look better outfitted for a photo shoot than a lecture. On Luce's second day at Shoreline, Francesca was wearing 3-inch golden gladiator heels and a mauve pumpkin-colored A-line dress. It had a loose bow around her neck and matched, almost exactly, the orange tie that Stephen wore with his ivory Oxford shirt and navy blazer. They were stunning to look at, and Luce was drawn to them, but not exactly in the couple's crush way Dawn had predicted the day before. Watching her teachers from her desk between Miles and Jasmine, Luce felt drawn to Francesca and Stephen for reasons closer to her heart. They reminded her of her relationship with Daniel. Though she'd never seen them actually touch, when they stood close together, which was almost always, the magnetism between them practically warped the walls. Of course, that had something to do with their powers as fallen angels, but it must also have had to do with the unique way they connected. Luce couldn't help resenting them. They were constant reminders of what she couldn't have right now. Most of the students had taken their seats. Dawn and Jasmine were going on to Luce about joining the steering committee so she could help them plan all these amazing social events. Luce had never been a big extracurricular girl, but these girls had been so nice to her, and Jasmine's face looked so bright when she talked about a yacht trip they were planning later that week, that Luce decided to give the committee a chance. She was adding her name to the roster when Stephen stepped forward, tossed his blazer on the table behind him, and wordlessly spread his arms out at his sides. As if summoned, a shard of deep black shadow seemed to part from the shadows of one of the redwoods right outside the window. It peeled itself off the grass, then took substance and whipped into the room through the open window. It was quick, and where it went, the day blackened, and the room fell into darkness. Luce gasped out of habit, but she wasn't the only one. In fact, most of the students inched back nervously in their desks
as Stephen began to twirl the shadow. He just reached his hands in and began wrenching faster and faster, seeming to wrestle with something. Soon the shadow was spinning around in front of him so quickly it went blurry, like the spokes of a turning wheel. A thick gust of mildewy wind was emitted from its core, blowing Luce's hair back from her face. Stephen manipulated the shadow, arm straining, from a messy, amorphous shape into a tight black sphere, no bigger than a grapefruit. "Class," he said, coolly bouncing the levitating ball of blackness a few inches above his fingers. "Meet the subject of today's lesson." Francesca stepped forward and transferred the shadow to her hands. In her heels, she was nearly as tall as Stephen. And, Luce imagined, she was just as skilled at dealing with the shadows. "You've all seen the announcers at some point," she said, walking slowly along the half-moon of student desks so they could each get a better look. "And some of you," she said, eyeing Luce, "even have some experience working with them. But do you really know what they are? Do you know what they can do?" Gossips, Luce thought, remembering what Daniel had told her the night of the battle. She was still too new to Shoreline to feel comfortable calling out the answer, but none of the other students seemed to know. Slowly, she raised her hand. Francesca cocked her head. "Luce?" "They carry messages," she said, growing surer as she spoke, thinking back to Daniel's assurance. "But they're harmless." "Messengers, yes, but harmless?" Francesca glanced at Stephen. Her tone betrayed nothing about whether Luce was right or wrong, which made Luce feel embarrassed. The entire class was surprised when Francesca stepped back alongside Stephen, took hold of one side of the shadow's border while he gripped the other, and gave it a firm tug. "We call this glimpsing," she said. The shadow bulged and stretched out, like a balloon being blown up. It made a thick glugging sound as its blackness distorted, showing colors more vivid than anything Luce had seen before. Deep chartreuse, glittering gold, marbleized swaths of pink and purple. A whole swirling world of color, glowing brighter and more distinct, behind a disappearing mesh of shadow. Stephen and Francesca were still tugging, stepping backward slowly, until the shadow was about the size and shape of a large projector screen. Then they stopped. They gave no warning, no, "What are you about to see?" And after a horrified moment, Luce knew why. There could be no preparation for this. The tangle of colors separated, settled finally into a canvas of distinct shapes. They were looking at a city, an ancient stone-walled city, on fire. Overcrowded and polluted, consumed by angry flames, people cornered by the flames, their mouths dark emptinesses, raising their arms to the skies. And everywhere a shower of bright sparks and burning bits of fire, a rain of deadly light landing everywhere and igniting everything it touched. Luce could practically smell the rot and doom coming through the shadow screen. It was horrific to look at, but the strangest part, by far, was that there wasn't any sound. Other students around her were ducking their heads, as if they were trying to block out some wail, some screaming that to Luce was indistinguishable. There was nothing but clean silence as they watched more and more people die. When she wasn't sure her stomach could take much more, the focus of the image shifted, sort of zoomed out, and Luce could see it from a distance. Not one, but two cities were burning. A strange idea came to her, softly, like a memory she'd always had, but hadn't thought of in a while. She knew what they were looking at. Sodom and Gomorrah, two cities in the Bible, two cities destroyed by God. Then, like turning off a light switch, Stephen and Francesca snapped their fingers and the image disappeared. The remnants of the shadow shattered into a small black cloud of ash that settled eventually on the floor of the classroom. Around Luce, the other students all seemed to be catching their breath. Luce couldn't take her eyes off the place where the shadow had been. How had it done that? It was starting to congeal again, the pieces of dark pooling together, slowly returning to a more familiar shadow shape. Its services complete, the announcer inched sluggishly along the floorboards, then slid right out of the classroom like the shadow cast by a closing door.
"You may be wondering why we just put you through that," Stephen said, addressing the class.
He and Francesca shared a worried look as they glanced around the room. Dawn was whimpering at her desk. "As you know," Francesca said, "most of the time in this class, we like to focus on what you, as Nephilim, have the power to do.
how you can change things for the better, however each of you decide to define that. We like to look forward instead of backward.
But what you saw today, Stephen said, was more than just a history lesson with incredible special effects, and it wasn't just imagery we conjured up. No, what you were seeing was the actual Sodom and Gomorrah, as they were destroyed by the great tyrant when he...
Ah, Francesca said, wagging a finger. We don't go for easy name-calling in here.
Of course, she's right as usual. Even I sometimes lapse into propaganda.
Stephen beamed at the class.
But as I was saying, the announcers are more than mere shadows. They can hold very valuable information. In a way, they are shadows, but shadows of the past, of long-ago and not-so-long-ago events.
What you saw today, Francesca finished, was just a demonstration of an invaluable skill some of you may be able to harness someday.
You won't want to try it right now.
Stephen wiped his hands with a handkerchief he'd pulled from a pocket.
In fact, we forbid you to attempt this, lest you lose control and lose yourselves in the shadows. But someday, maybe, it will be a possibility.
Luce shared a glance with Miles. He gave her a wide-eyed smile, as if he were relieved to hear this. He didn't seem to feel at all shut out, not the way Luce did. Besides, Francesca said, most of you will probably find that you feel fatigued. Luce looked around the room at the students' faces as Francesca talked. Her voice had the effect of aloe on a sunburn. Half of the kids had their eyes closed, as if they'd been soothed. That's very normal. Shadow glimpsing is not done without great cost. It takes energy to look back, even a few days, but to look back millennia? Well, you can feel the effects yourselves. In light of that, she looked at Stephen, we're going to let you out early today to rest.
We'll pick up again tomorrow, so make sure you've done your reading on disapparition, Stephen said. Class dismissed.
Around Luce, students rose slowly from their desks. They looked dazed, exhausted. When she stood up, her own knees were a little wobbly, but somehow she felt less shaken than the others seemed to be. She tightened her cardigan around her shoulders and followed Miles out of the classroom.
Pretty heavy stuff, he said, taking the stairs down from the deck, two at a time. Are you okay?
I'm fine, Luce said. She was. Are you? Miles rubbed his forehead.
It just feels like we were really there. I'm glad they let us out early. Feel like I need a nap.
Seriously, Dawn added, coming up behind them on the winding path back to the dorm. That was the last thing I was expecting for my Wednesday morning. I am so conking out right now.
It was true. The destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah had been horrifying. So real, Luce's skin still felt hot from the blaze. They took the shortcut back to the dorm, around the north side of the mess hall and into the shade of the redwoods. It was strange seeing the campus so empty, with all the other kids at Shoreline still in class in the main building. One by one, the Nephilim peeled off the path and headed straight to bed. Except for Luce. She wasn't tired, not at all. Instead, she felt strangely energized. She wished again that Daniel were there. She badly wanted to talk to him about Francesca and Stephen's demonstration, and to know why he hadn't told her sooner that there was more to the shadows than she could see. In front of Luce were the stairs leading up to her dorm room. Behind her, the redwood forest. She paced outside the entrance to the dorm, unwilling to go inside, unwilling to sleep this off and pretend she hadn't seen it. Francesca and Stephen wouldn't have been trying to scare the class. They must have intended to teach them something. Something they couldn't come right out and say. But if the announcers carried messages and echoes of the past, then what was the point of the one they'd just been shown? She went into the woods. Her watch said 11 a.m., but it could have been midnight under the dark canopy of trees. Goosebumps rose on her bare legs as she pressed deeper into the shady forest. She didn't want to think about it too hard. Thinking would only increase the odds of her chickening out. She was about to enter uncharted territory. Forbidden territory. She was going to summon an announcer. She'd done things to them before. The very first time was when she pinched one during class to keep it from sneaking into her pocket. There was the time in the library when she'd swatted one away from Penn. Poor Penn. Luce couldn't help wondering what message that announcer had been carrying. If she had known how to manipulate it then, the way Francesca and Stephen had manipulated the one today, could she have stopped what happened? She closed her eyes.
saw Pen slumped against the wall, her chest aproned with blood. Her fallen friend. No. Looking back on that night was too painful, and it never got loose anywhere. All she could do now was look ahead. She had to fight the cold fear clawing at her insides. A slinking black familiar shape lurking alongside the true shadow of a low redwood branch a mere 10 yards in front of her. She took a step toward it, and the announcer shrank back. Trying not to make any sudden moves, Luce pressed on, closer, closer, willing the shadow not to slip away. There. The shadow twitched under its tree branch, but stayed put. Heart racing, Luce tried to calm herself down. Yes, it was dark in this forest, and yes, not a soul knew where she was. And okay, sure, there was a chance no one would miss her for a good while if anything happened, but there was no reason to panic. Right? So why did she feel gripped by a gnawing fear? Why was she getting the same tremor in her hands she used to get when she saw the shadows as a girl, back before she learned they were basically harmless? It was time to make a move. She could either stand here, frozen forever, or she could chicken out and go sulking back to the dorm, or... Her arm shot out, no longer shaking, and took hold of the thing. She dragged it up and clutched it tightly to her chest, surprised by its heft, by how cold and damp it was, like a wet towel. Her arms were shaking. What did she do with it now? The image of those burning cities flashed into her mind. Luce wondered whether she could stand to see this message on her own. If she could even figure out how to unlock its secrets. How did these things work? All Francesca and Stephen had done was pull. Holding her breath, Luce worked her fingers along the shadow's feathery edges, gripped it, and gave it a gentle tug. To her surprise, the announcer was pliant, almost like putty, and took whatever shape her hand suggested. Grimacing, she tried to manipulate it into a square, into something like the screen she'd seen her teachers form. At first, it was easy, but the shadow seemed to grow stiffer the more she tried to stretch it out. And every time she repositioned her hands to pull on another part, the rest would recoil into a cold, lumpy black mass. Soon she was out of breath and using her arm to wipe the sweat off her brow. She did not want to give up. But when the shadow started to vibrate, Luce screamed and dropped it to the ground. Instantly, it darted off into the trees. Only after it was gone did Luce realize it hadn't been the shadow that was vibrating. It was the cell phone in her backpack. She'd gotten used to not having one. Until that moment, she'd even forgotten that Mr. Cole had given her his old phone before he put her on the plane to California. It was almost completely useless, solely so that he would have a way to reach her, to keep her up to date on what stories he was feeding to her parents, who still believed she was at Sword and Cross, so that when Luce talked to them, she could lie consistently. No one besides Mr. Cole even had her number. And for really annoying safety reasons, Daniel hadn't given her a way to reach him. And now the phone had cost Luce her first real progress with a shadow. She pulled it out and opened the text Mr. Cole had just sent. "Call your parents. They think you got an A- on a history test I just gave, and that you're trying out for the swim team next week. Don't forget to act like everything's okay." And a second one, a minute later. "Is everything okay?" Grouchily, Luce stuffed the phone in her backpack and started tramping through the thick mulch of redwood needles toward the edge of the forest, toward her dorm. The text made her wonder about the rest of the kids at Sword and Cross. Was Arian still there? And if so, who was she sailing paper airplanes to during class? Had Molly found someone else to make her enemy now that Luce was gone? Or had both of them moved on since Luce and Daniel had left? Did Randy buy the story that Luce's parents had made her transfer? Luce sighed. She hated not telling her parents the truth, hated not being able to tell them how far away she felt and how alone. But a phone call? Every false word she said, A- on a made-up history test, tryouts for some bogus swim team, would only make her feel that much more homesick. Mr. Cole must be out of his mind, telling her to call them and lie. But if she told her parents the truth, the real truth, they would think she was out of her mind. And if she didn't get in touch with them, they would know something was up. They'd drive out to Sword and Cross, find her missing, and then what? She could email them. Lying wouldn't be so hard by email. It would buy her a few days before she had to call. She would email them tonight. She stepped out of the forest, onto the path, and gasped. It was night. She looked back at the lush, shaded woods. How long had she been in there with the shadow? She glanced at her watch. It was 8:30. She'd missed lunch, and her afternoon classes, and dinner. It had been so dark in the woods, she hadn't noticed time passing at all, but now it all slammed into her. She was tired, cold, and hungry. After 3 wrong turns in the maze-like dorm, Luce finally found her door. Silently hoping that Shelby would be wherever it was she disappeared to at night, Luce slipped her huge, old-fashioned key into the lock and turned the knob. The lights were off, but a fire was burning in the hearth. Shelby was seated cross-legged on the floor, eyes closed, meditating. When Luce came in, one eye popped open, looking highly annoyed at the sight before it. "Sorry," Luce whispered, sinking into the desk chair closest to the door. "Don't mind me. Pretend I'm not here." For a little while, Shelby did just that. She closed her evil eye and went back to meditating, and the room was tranquil. Luce turned on the computer that came with her desk and stared at the screen, trying to compose in her head the most innocuous message possible to her parents, and, while she was at it, one to Callie, who'd been sending a steady stream of unread emails to Luce's inbox this past week. Typing as slowly as she possibly could so her keyboard taps wouldn't give Shelby yet another reason to hate her, Luce wrote, "Dear Mom and Dad, I miss you guys so much. Just wanted to drop you a line. Life at Sword and Cross is good." Her chest constricted as she strained to keep her fingers from typing. "As far as I know, no one else has died this week." "Still doing fine in all my classes," she made herself write instead. "Might even try out for the swim team." Luce looked out the window at the clear, starry sky. She had to sign off fast, otherwise she'd lose it. "Wonder when this rainy weather will let up. Guess that's November in Georgia. Love, Luce." She copied the message into a new email to Callie, changed a few choice words, moved her mouse over the send button, closed her eyes, double-clicked, and hung her head. She was a horrible fake of a daughter, a liar of a friend. And what had she been thinking? These were the blandest, most red-flag-worthy emails ever written. They were only going to freak people out. Her stomach growled. A second time, more loudly. Shelby cleared her throat. Luce spun around in her chair to face the girl, only to find her in downward dog. Luce could feel the tears welling up in the corners of her eyes. "I'm hungry, okay? Why don't you file a complaint? Get me transferred to another room." Shelby calmly hopped forward on her yoga mat, swooped her arms into a prayer position, and said, "I was just going to tell you about the box of organic mac and cheese in my sock drawer. No need for the waterworks. Cheese." 11 minutes later, Luce was sitting under a blanket on her bed with a steaming bowl of cheesy pasta, dry eyes, and a roommate who'd suddenly stopped hating her. "I wasn't crying because I was hungry," Luce wanted to clarify. Though the mac and cheese was so good, the gift so unexpectedly kind of Shelby, it almost brought fresh tears to her eyes. Luce wanted to open up to someone, and Shelby was, well, there. She hadn't thawed out all the way, but sharing her stash of food was a huge step for someone who'd barely spoken to Luce so far. I'm having some family issues. It's just hard being away." "Boo-hoo," Shelby said, chomping on her own bowl of macaroni. "Let me guess, your parents are still happily married." "That's not fair," Luce said, sitting up. "You have no idea what I've been through."
"And you have some idea of what I've been through?"
Shelby stared Luce down.
"Didn't think so. Look, here's me. Only child raised by a single mom. Daddy issues? Maybe. A pain in the ass to live with because I hate to share? Almost certainly. But what I can't stand is some sweet-faced, spoon-fed sweetheart with a happy home life and some fancy boyfriend showing up on my turf to moan about her poor, long-distance love affair."
Luce sucked in her breath.
"That's not it at all." "Oh, no. Enlighten me." "I'm a fake," Luce said. "I'm lying to people I love."
"Lying to your fancy boyfriend?" Shelby's eyes narrowed in a way that made Luce think her roommate might actually be interested.
"No," Luce muttered. "I'm not even speaking to him."
Shelby leaned back on Luce's bed and propped her feet up so they rested on the underside of the top bunk.
"Why not?" "It's long, stupid, and complicated.
Well, every girl with half a brain knows there's only one thing to do when you break up with your man.
No, we didn't break up, Luce said, at the exact same time as Shelby said.
Change your hair.
Change my hair?
Fresh start, Shelby said.
I've dyed mine orange, chopped it off. Hell, once I even shaved it after this jerk really broke my heart.
There was a small oval mirror with an ornate wooden frame attached to the dresser across the room. From her position on the bed, Luce could see her reflection. She put down the bowl of pasta and stood up to move closer. She had chopped her hair off after Trevor, but that was different. Most of it had been singed anyway. And when she'd arrived at Sword and Cross, it had been Arian's hair she cut. Yet Luce thought she understood what Shelby meant when she said, fresh start. You could turn into someone else, pretend you weren't the person who'd just been through so much heartache. Even though, thank God, Luce wasn't mourning the permanent loss of her relationship with Daniel, she was mourning all sorts of other losses. Penn, her family, the life she used to have before things got so complicated.
You're really thinking about it, aren't you? Don't make me bust out the peroxide from under the sink.
Luce ran her fingers through her short black hair. What would Daniel think? But if he wanted her to be happy here until they could be together again, she had to let go of who she'd been at Sword and Cross. She turned around to face Shelby.
Get the bottle.
4. 15 days. She wasn't that blonde. Luce wet her hands in the sink and tucked her short, bleached waves. She'd made it through a full load of classes on Thursday, which included an unexpectedly stiff 2-hour safety lecture from Francesca to reiterate why the announcers were not to be messed with casually. It almost seemed like she'd been addressing Luce directly. Back-to-back pop quizzes in her regular biology and math classes in the main school building, and what felt like 8 straight hours of aghast stares from her classmates, Nephilim and non-Neph kids alike. Even though Shelby had acted cool about Luce's new look in the privacy of their dorm room the night before, she wasn't effusive with compliments the way Arian was, or reliably supportive the way Penn had been. Stepping out into the world this morning, Luce had been overcome by nerves. Miles had been the first to see her, and he'd given her a thumbs up. But he was so nice, he never let on if he really thought she looked terrible. Of course, Dawn and Jasmine had flocked to her side right after Humanities, eager to touch her hair, asking Luce who her inspiration had been. "Very Gwen Stefani," Jasmine had said, nodding.
"No, it's Madge, right?" Dawn said. "Like Vogue era?"
Before Luce could answer, Dawn gestured between Luce and herself.
"But I guess we aren't Twinkies anymore."
"Twinkies?" Luce shook her head. Jasmine squinted at Luce. "Come on, don't say you never noticed. You two look, well, looked so much alike, you practically could have been sisters." Now, standing alone before the main school building's bathroom mirror, Luce gazed at her reflection and thought about wide-eyed Dawn. They had similar coloring, pale skin, flushed lips, dark hair. But Dawn was smaller than she was. She wore bright colors 6 days a week, and she was way more chipper than Luce could ever be. A few superficial aspects aside, Luce and Dawn couldn't have been more different. The bathroom door swung open, and a wholesome-looking brunette in jeans and a yellow sweater entered. Luce recognized her from European history class. Amy something. She leaned against the sink next to Luce and began to fidget with her eyebrows.
"Why'd you do that to your hair?" she asked, eyeing Luce.
Luce blinked. It was one thing to talk about it with her sort of friends at Shoreline, but she'd never even spoken to this girl before. Shelby's answer, fresh start, popped into her mind. But who was she kidding? All that bottle of peroxide had done last night was make Luce look as phony on the outside as she already felt on the inside. Callie and her parents would hardly recognize her right now, which wasn't the point at all. And Daniel, what would Daniel think? Luce suddenly felt so transparently fake, even a stranger could see through her.
"I don't know."
She pushed past the girl and out the bathroom door.
"I don't know why I did it."
Bleaching her hair wouldn't wash away the dark memories of the past few weeks. If she really wanted a fresh start, she'd have to make one. But how? There was so little she actually had control over at the moment. Her whole world was in the hands of Mr. Cole and Daniel, and they were both far away. It was scary how quickly and how much she'd come to rely on Daniel. Scarier still that she didn't know when she'd see him next. Compared to the bliss-filled days with him she'd been expecting in California, this was the loneliest she'd ever been. She trudged across the campus, slowly realizing that the only time she'd felt any independence since she'd arrived at Shoreline had been alone in the woods with the shadow. After yesterday's in-class demonstration, Luce had been expecting more of the same from Francesca and Stephen. She had hoped that maybe the students would have a chance to experiment with the shadows on their own today. She had even had the briefest fantasy of being able to do what she'd done in the forest in front of all the Nephilim. None of that had happened. In fact, class today had felt like a big step back. A boring lecture about announcer etiquette and safety, and why the students should never, under any circumstances, try on their own what they'd seen the day before. It was frustrating and regressive. So now, instead of heading back to the dorm, Luce found herself jogging behind the mess hall, down the trail to the edge of the bluff, and up the wooden stairs of the Nephilim Lodge. Francesca's office was in the annex on the second floor, and she told the class to feel free to come by any time. The building was remarkably different without the other students to warm it up. Dim and drafty, an almost abandoned feeling. Every noise Luce made seemed to carry, echoing off the sloping wooden beams. She could see a lamp on the landing one floor up and smell the rich aroma of brewing coffee. She didn't know yet whether she was going to tell Francesca what she'd been able to do in the forest. It might seem insignificant to someone as skilled as Francesca, or it might seem like a violation of her instructions to the class today. Part of Luce just wanted to feel her teacher out, to see whether she might be someone Luce could turn to when, on days like today, she started to feel as if she might fall apart. She reached the top of the stairs and found herself at the head of a long, open hallway. On her left, beyond the wooden banister, she looked down at the dark, empty classroom on the second story. On her right was a row of heavy wooden doors with stained glass transoms over them. Walking quietly along the floorboards, Luce realized she didn't know which office was Francesca's. Only one of the doors was ajar, the third one from the right, with light emanating from the pretty stained glass scene in the transom. She thought she heard a male voice inside. She was poised to knock when a woman's sharp tone made her freeze. "It was a mistake to even try," Francesca practically hissed. "We took a chance. We got unlucky." "Stephen." "Unlucky?" Francesca scoffed. "You mean reckless. From a purely statistical standpoint, the odds of an announcer bearing bad news were far too great. You saw what it did to those kids. They weren't ready." A pause. Luce inched a little closer along the Persian rug in the hall. "But she was."
"I won't sacrifice all the progress an entire class has made just because some...
"Don't be short-sighted, Francesca. We came up with a beautiful curriculum. I know that as well as you. Our students outperform every other Nephilim program in the world. You did all that. You have a right to feel a sense of pride. But things are different now." "Stephen's right, Francesca."
A third voice. Male. Luce thought it sounded familiar. But who was it?
"Might as well throw your academic calendar out the window. The truce between our sides is the only timeline that matters anymore."
Francesca sighed.
"You really think?"
The unknown voice said,
"If I know Daniel, he'll be right on time. He's probably counting down the minutes already." "There's something else," Stephen said.
A pause, then what sounded like a drawer sliding open, then a gasp. Luce would have killed to be on the other side of the wall to see what they could see.
"Where did you get that?" the other male voice asked. "Are you trading?"
"Of course he's not." Francesca sounded stung. "Stephen found it in the forest during one of his rounds the other night."
"It's authentic, isn't it?" Stephen asked.
A sigh.
"Been too long for me to say," the stranger hedged. "I haven't seen a star shot in ages. Daniel will know. I'll take it to him."
"That's all? What do you suggest we do in the meantime?" Francesca asked.
"Look, this isn't my thing."
The familiarity of that male voice was like an itch at the back of Luce's brain.
"And it's really not my style."
"Please,"
Francesca pleaded. The office was silent. Luce's heart was pounding.
"Okay, if I were you, step things up around here.
Tighten their supervision and do everything you can to get all of them ready. End times aren't supposed to be very pretty.
End times? That was what Arian had said would happen if Cam and his army won that night at Sword and Cross. But they hadn't won, unless there'd already been another battle. But then, what would the Nephilim need to get ready for? The sound of heavy chair legs scraping along the floor made Luce jump back. She knew she should not be caught eavesdropping on this conversation, whatever it was about. For once, she was glad of the endless supply of mysterious alcoves in the shoreline architecture. She ducked under a